Welcome to Shattering Myth, a program devoted to the most important, to the fastest growing, and now the largest segment of society, the segment that the media and politicians don't want to acknowledge but is there nonetheless. To those of you who have come to realize that all of the world's political, religious, economic, and media institutions are corrupt, and even to those of you who are slowly coming to the realization that there's something desperately wrong with your military, the realization is that all of these human institutions are counterproductive and that there isn't one of them that can be fixed. There is no salvation from man. Our phone number, if you would like to participate in this discussion anytime over the next 2 hours, is 877-376-45. Since it is official, I would like to go ahead and make the announcement. Many of you know we have been requesting since early October a return to the original time slot and the original duration for Shattering Myth. I had asked for and received a different time slot, and the elongated time, the time slot that we are in currently, under the hope that that in that slot we could more effectively syndicate the show. And a number of you were unbelievably devoted to that cause. I think there were two reasons that it did not occur as we had hoped it would. The first of those is that radio, talk radio in particular, has changed dramatically. There are very few meaningful radio stations that are standard talk under the basis of the station sells the advertising, and the host provides the audience, the reason to listen to the station, and the host is paid a share of the national ads. That, and the station makes money on the local ads that they sell for listeners to that particular syndicated host. That has essentially died. And it died for a lot of reasons, the most prevalent of which is the advent of the Internet. And what the Internet has done, particularly with broadband and streaming, and the fact that now you can listen to an Internet stream on virtually any device, from your smartphone to your tablet to your computer to a podcast, you just have so many options. And because with the Internet, you can choose to listen to a talk radio program when you want to listen, as opposed to when it is being broadcast, and where you want to listen, which is very different than the radio, which appeals primarily to those in their car, so those who are engaged in long commutes to and from work, or those who are driving trucks for a living on our highways, since very few people listen to their radios at home or at work. The vast majority listen to terrestrial radio in their cars. The success of radio programs on a traditional broadcast syndicated basis has dwindled. There isn't a market for it. Then a third contributing factor to all of this is that with the lion's share of listenership being archives listeners online, it's on a program like this, archive listenership is probably 15 to 20 times live listenership. What you find is that there just isn't enough audience to justify advertisers spending lots of money with terrestrial radio stations. Then you have to add to that the problem that arose with particularly liberal zealots, and in particular, the gay rights movement. They tried desperately to create a liberal radio voice. They tried, I think it was called Radio America, and tried to hire only liberal talk radio show hosts, but it didn't work. There's just not enough substance to liberalism to do a liberal radio show. There's, you know, one radio host and 50 is liberal. And so that didn't work. And when that didn't work, then the only option they had left was consistent with Obama economics. And that is take those who are successful and tear them down. And if you tear them down, then even though you can't generate a credible voice, you can at least silence the opposition. And they went after Rush Limbaugh. And the Rush Limbaugh attack was initially got traction when there was I think it was a cabinet-level individual in the Obama administration that took a very politically correct, extremely liberal view, and I believe the issue was contraception in lower schools, amongst lower grades. And Rush Limbaugh used a derogative term to describe that woman. Now, personally, I think a negative depiction of her character and morality is appropriate. Name-calling typically isn't an appropriate tactic. I would use, you know, evidence and reason to expose the fact that she was an advocate for that which was immoral. But anyway, they began to smear Rush Limbaugh, and they went to the 50 largest national advertisers, and they got them first to stop doing any advertising on Rush Limbaugh show. Cumulus started to lose tens of millions of dollars, which is Cumulus's, not Cumulus, but it was Premier. I began to lose tens of millions of dollars. Clear Channel is the name of the syndicate for Premier. And they went to those same stations, the stations that carried Rush Limbaugh, and they created a boycott where none of the top 50 advertisers would then run ads for fear of being demeaned among the very vocal, very media savvy gay rights movement. And corporate America is extraordinarily politically correct. So that even on the radio stations, on other shows that were carried by those by the same syndicate, the top 50 advertisers would refuse to advertise. And then they did the same thing for Sean Hannity. And what you ended up with is a hugely diminished income stream. It's what cratered Talk Radio Network. It's what cratered four or five other of the larger talk radio syndicates. And even Cumulus, which is the other syndicate that I mentioned, it began to suffer financially. And so what ended up happening is that most music now is played via electronic device in the car. You know, it's transferred on an iPod or USB, and it's played in the car based upon an individual's particular favorite genre or artist or albums. And so there's no reason to hear commercial interruption on radio on your drive to work if you're going to listen to music. The only two types of radio that continued to draw an audience via terrestrial stations that could generate some revenue for the station, since talk radio was the dominant audience generator, but it was no longer generating revenue, was country music, which is very talk oriented. The lyrics are very conversational, and the hosts of those programs are sort of conversational. And the idea of country music is really to relate to the listener. And sports talk radio. And sports talk radio began to proliferate, where you go from, in just the largest markets, having a sports talk show to having five, six, and seven, and even smaller metropolitan areas all competing with each other. And so a show like this that is talk radio, topic-driven talk radio, fell into a spot where the market dried. There were way too many programs, way too many hosts, and far too many stations that were still in the business. And what the surviving small stations that weren't part of either Cumulus or Clear Channel did is they then went to pay-per-play. And if you wonder why the guys like Alex Jones and others on this syndicate sell concoctions, let's use a fairly benign term, why they sell herbal remedies and why they sell all manner of things that you just don't hear advertised in more traditional forums that are host-driven products that the host endorses, is because it's called pay-for-play. The host pays the radio station to air their program on an hourly basis, and then the host sells products, typically high-margin products. You know, if you're selling herbal concoctions, you can sell them for 5 to 10 times what they cost to make. And the profit that is made on the sale of those high-margin items then pays for the airtime. And that's how most of the syndicates are built, which is why host, hawk, very lofty promised concoctions. I'm not going to do that. So then you end up in a situation where it becomes extremely difficult. Now, I want to take some of the blame personally. Part of the reason that today's show was difficult to syndicate is that we don't have, this program speaks to, and it's probably the only program that speaks to the widest cross-section of America, to Americans who all polls have now indicated by an overwhelming majority know that their religious, their political institutions, their academic institutions, their judicial institutions are corrupt. Well, that is the largest segment of society. The group who realize that these institutions have failed them don't have an affinity for any one thing, and therefore it's difficult to relate to them. We'll be back in a moment. Sharing, before we get into the news today, a little overview of why we're changing times and going back to the original time slot and duration for Shattering Myths. I just thought this is a very thoughtful audience that you'd all appreciate. Why it's difficult to syndicate a radio show in the old sense of syndication, what's changed. So I'm sharing this with all of you because you're all thoughtful individuals, and also because there's a number of you who were extraordinarily committed to fighting this uphill battle, as I say, call it rowing up a waterfall to make this happen. So, as I say, a significant part of the problem is me, the content of the show. If I had eliminated one of the foes that we assail in the first hour of the show, you know, if I spoke on behalf of corporate America, there'd be an audience for that, but I don't. If I spoke on behalf of the military, as virtually everyone does, there'd be an audience for that, but I don't. In fact, I can't. If I spoke on behalf of the Tea Party or libertarians, even conservative republicanism, if there was such a thing anymore, there'd be an audience for that, but I can't do that either. If I spoke on behalf of Christianity going back, say, to its roots, a more reformed version of Christianity without the pagan overtones, but I most certainly can't do that either. Not in and represent Yahweh and the covenant, so there's no affinity. I can't even speak on behalf of socialist secularism when we're clearly anti-religious, and There's a lot of people that know a lot about Islam that apologize for Islam, and I'm not about to do that because we couldn't be honest. So
what you're saying is if you wrote your own stuff, you'd be a lot more popular.
If we could choose one of those affinities to lie on behalf of, we would be eminently more popular. Even if we were to advocate a conspiracy and be opposed to many of them, but, you know, not be overtly opposed to the military, just say that the military is being manipulated by conspiratorial elements. You know, not be overtly opposed to Christianity, just to say that it's being manipulated by conspiratorial influences. You could even find, I mean, there's a 5-6% affinity group for conspiracy. But
to be fair, you haven't compromised on what you want the show to be since the beginning.
No.
So you've kept it very. You've stayed with what you want it to be. You've stayed with it. You haven't, we've talked before. There's a million different things that we could do to make the show sellable, but it's not something that gets us, it gets us popularity, but it doesn't gain anything else.
Well, you lose everything.
What you lose is
your credibility. What you lose is a consistency with the eyewitness testimony. And I decided we were going to do this show in a manner that was absolutely as consistent with the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, with Yahweh's attitude and approach, as was humanly possible. Now, I'm a flawed implement, I understand that there are times when what I say inadvertently differs from what Yahweh would say about his animosity to religion and to politics, to militarism, to jaundiced economic schemes. He would be far more articulate, although far more condemning than I am. But at least that is the premise. The program begins with an expose on why human institutions are corrupt, why they are counterproductive, why we should not be loyal to them, why we should disassociate ourselves from them, why if you believe in them, you will squander your life and your soul, and why there is a better alternative in terms of Yahweh's guidance in his Torah and participation in his covenant. That's the purpose of the show. It's the only reason we do it. Now, you take it one step further. What did Yahweh say about the popularity of his testimony, and particularly the terms and conditions of his covenant? How many people did he say would be beneficiaries of his mercy at any one time? The answer is thousands. And thousands amongst billions is one in a million. We have the most important affinity in the world, but it's rather small. Now, I don't want to create the impression that somehow choosing to be consistent with Yahweh's approach, which is anti-military. You read Daniel, and you read what he has to say about the menacing nature of the military presence of empires. God is hugely opposed to militaries. Never established a military, even with Yisrael. The one battle we know that Yahweh intervened was against the Philistines. God himself provided Dode with the wherewithal to take down their mightiest soldier one-on-one with a slingshot. You can't call God's intervention in drowning the pursuing Egyptian army that reneged on their promise to let the children of Israel go, that were trying now to wipe out an unarmed group of people, engaging with the military, because he just simply wiped out the menacing military. And if you look at the return to the promised land, when Yahweh said, I want you to eliminate the iniquity, the religious and political poison that's in the land in these specific cities at this specific time. That was also without a military. Even the one battle that we're told about, and it wasn't a battle, but it was the confrontation that occurred around Jericho, and there wasn't any military. It was just simply, I want you to walk around. I want you to play music. I want you to sing and shout, and you know, the rest will just take care of itself. So we have on the line the gentleman that was one of the most active in trying to syndicate the show, and his name is Kirk. Kirk's a regular contributor to the show. And Kirk, since that it didn't work for a whole host of reasons, and you talked to many of the program directors of the radio stations, we're just going to return to the original time and length of the show and make the show a little crisper, a little more fun, a little easier to do, just essentially more enjoyable.
Yeah, I had one quick comment.
Yes.
You know, when I was actually doing that, and I felt really bad because I couldn't get anything going. I just didn't get it. Well, they wouldn't be interested. And some people were interested, but the topics just, they ran away from the topics. They just didn't feel they could do them.
Yeah.
But the one thing that I found out that really blew me away.
They don't want to be anti-Christian because they're afraid of what their audience would say to them or threaten them. They didn't want to be overtly anti-Islam because of the threats associated with that. They couldn't imagine being anti-military in a country that is, mm-hmm. you know, patriotic to the point of desperation.
Mm-hmm.
And they certainly didn't, and most probably didn't even want to be anti-Republican. Because talk radio is based on being anti-Democrat, pro-Republican. So I'm sure every one of those issues drove them crazy.
Well, I would have thought that somebody that was a rebel out there somewhere that just wanted to be controversial and draw a crowd, you know,
right.
You know, what the hey.
Yeah, but, or somebody just say, you know, we know from the Pew study, the Pew study of across America, that three-quarters of Americans, between two-thirds and three-quarters of Americans, have absolutely no faith in Congress, in the judicial system, in the police, in religion, in either political party, and it goes right on down the line. Since the overwhelming preponderance of Americans have rejected all of these institutions, you'd think that maybe there would be some radio show, radio station owners that said, wouldn't you like to have someone out there that can explain why these institutions are so universally rejected, why they have failed people?
Well,
and there's no one else doing it.
No, I thought the news portion alone would be worth the thing, and I thought the IQ and you on Friday would be if you just played that first hour and used mm-hmm. that just an explanation. And we've been in a war. You know, they celebrated the 24th year of the invasion of Iraq last Friday. I mean, it's so
quiet.
Yeah, wow. That was
Red Gulf Storm 1, where we began this, what I predicted all of those years ago would be counterproductive and predicted all of the fallout and all of the consequence of that invasion. And we find out that it was all a pile of lies and we made a bad situation worse, and we've been celebrating making a bad situation worse and continuing to make the same mistakes ever since. I don't think there's anybody out there that's explaining how and why we went wrong.
Well, you know, you are doing something that Abraham and Moshe didn't do. I mean, they left Babylon and left Mizraim, and they didn't go back and tell them, you know, this is what's wrong with you people.
Yeah, that's true.
They just took the family and left.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, well, you know what? Part of is that they didn't have the messaging devices that we have now, where we can distance ourselves from Babylon, distance ourselves from Egypt, and this integration of religion and politics, and still speak out against those things. So you know, we have some advantages that they don't have, and of course. We're the benefit of what they have done on our behalf. I mean, their relationship with Yahweh, they're having the details of that relationship committed to writing in the Torah, of course, empowers us well beyond what they had available to them. I mean, surely they had Yahweh available to them, but you know, we stand on a much firmer foundation because of what they have done before.
Yeah, I'm kind of just a little humor there, but I mean, something I did find out in talking to these radio programs that I didn't understand. Now, as a Christian, when I was a Christian, we raised money to go on the air to spread the good news.
Right.
Or the bad news.
Yeah, the bad news as we turned out. Yeah, the false news.
Yeah, the lies. But regardless, I thought that was us putting our money together to do this, and then we did it freely on the radio, and we financed it. Now, what the radios, a lot of the religious channels told me that if you wanted to get on, here's what you do. They basically call for the tithes and offerings to come into the radio station, and they split them 50-50 or more.
Wow.
I said, my God.
Wow.
Do you think the average tither who's scrimping, or the little lady who's scrimping her money to do something for Jesus,
right,
would understand that when she scraped up that $100 and sent it in, and it's going to be split with the radio station just for their profit?
Wow. Between the host and the radio station, right?
Is that a sicko or what?
That's a sicko. Yep. You know, it's one of the things that I discovered very early on is that, particularly in the book, A Prophet of Doom, is that since there wasn't a Muslim on the planet that can deal with the evidence that's presented in Prophet of Doom, because 100% of it comes from their Quran and Hadith, and since there was no way that any Muslim could refute the devastating blow that it wields to Islam, that I was primarily going to be attacked individually, be all ad hominem attacks, and that all of those attacks would be that I'm doing this for money.
Yeah.
And when I made the book available in its entirety free, and when I never asked for donations, and when we do this show for free, and when I did 3,000 radio interviews for free, and you never once take a dime. Well, they'll still use that as you're doing it for money. There is no basis in fact in the ad hominem argument.
No.
And that's why we don't take donations. That's why we don't sponsor a product, is that, the fact is that Yahweh gave us these directions and this guidance and this wonderful gift of the covenant. It's not ours to sell.
No. No, you're supposed to share it. And it's freely, and the priests were not allowed, not the priests, but the...
The lowly were the priests, so they're the same. You're right.
We know they got to eat, but they don't. This is not a wealth-making opportunity.
Right. In fact, Yahweh made certain with those who officiated on his behalf, the lowly, those who... worked with the people so that they would understand all aspects of the Torah. He told them, you cannot own land. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to. Land was the source of wealth. You cannot own land. You can't own a business. You can't own land. No one can pay you any money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's no tithe of money. There's at no place where you tithe money. You can't pay the priest. They can't own land. They can't build a business. You can feed them the edible portions or whatever you're donating. They can eat. You can provide them with wool. You can provide them with wood so they can make a shelter, but they have to make it, and they can cook their food. But that's it. Yahweh was very wise in that regard, in that if you're going to speak for him, you're not going to profit from it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you do. He made it really clear that the lowly get the greatest reward of all, which is they get to engage with Yahweh. They get to convey his message. They get to learn from the greatest teacher in the world, and there's nothing more fun than sharing what the greatest teacher in the world has to say. They have the most rewarding job in the world. This is the most wonderful job we as people could ever have. But it's God wanted to make it clear that it's not financially rewarding.
No, well, they were the most educated, too. They read the best, and they got to hang around the Ark of the Covenant and read the actual Torah.
Right.
Wow.
Wow.
That's not a minor gift.
No, and they got to officiate and explain all of the symbolism associated with the seven Moed Mikra, the invitations to be called out and meet with God.
Mm-hmm. Let me tell you something, if I may, that
sure.
I've been doing, and you might give some ideas. I'm not real good with translation and all, but I used to look up when I first ran across your mm-hmm. plan. I knew a lot of stuff. I didn't have it in the right context. I didn't have the right attitude, but I knew history, and mm-hmm. Yahweh was named, you know, even though I knew they tried to call him every other name and so
right.
forth. So I was off with a little bit of a head start when I first got a hold of your books and started
mm-hmm.
reading.
You love if you love history,
mm-hmm.
if you love just reading and learning and then thinking about what you've read and learned, I mean, you've got a huge head start when it comes to knowing Yahweh and understanding the story.
Mm-hmm.
If that's the point you're making? Well, I couldn't agree anymore with you. I think it's why James, and we'll continue this after the break, Kirk, it's why our good friend James, we had such an advantage over other people. And I think why a number of us come in advantaged. If you love to read, if you love to study, if you love history, then you're going to have a leg up when it comes to knowing Yahweh and participating in His covenant.
Okay.
Welcome back to Shattering Mr. Revenant Conversation with Kirk, who is on the front lines talking with radio stations about their formats. And Kirk, I'm sure you not only found those who radio stations that were asking for tithes that were split with the radio station and hosts that were asking for tithes that were split with the radio station and the host, and also lots of pay for play.
90% probably would pay would take your you could go on tomorrow. All you got to do is write me a check.
Right. So my can't assume, but if you were listening as I began, I thought that our audience would enjoy just an overview of you know what the nature is of talk radio and why it is as it is. Was my summation of it reasonably accurate?
Oh, it's very accurate. It's just an advertising. It's like an info commercial world now.
Yeah, it is. Exactly.
I mean, it's
an infomercial world.
Radio I grew up with, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no, you know, you just pay and get whatever you want them to say, they'll say.
Correct.
Whatever you want them to do, they'll
do. Yeah. If you're going to succeed in this world now, you've got to have something to hawk. If it's religion, then you're hawking tithes and offerings. And if it's a conspiracy show, then it's snake oil. And if it's a medical show, then it's some unique treatment kind of thing. You've got to have something that you're hawking, that you're offering for profit, because it's a pay for play world out there. And you know, that's okay. You know, one of the nice things about this, Kirk, is when we began it, we knew that Yahweh's family and he himself and his word have always been unpopular. We're offering the single most valuable thing in the world, access to Yahweh, knowledge regarding Yahweh, information on how to participate in his covenant. There is nothing more valuable than that. We're even explaining the world as it is so that you understand why there are so many problems.
Mm-hmm.
Extraordinarily valuable, but it's never going to be popular.
No, well, I would have thought though with when you talk about when you talk about prophecy and it's so, and then you mirror that with what's going on in Assyria or whatever, that it
right.
would just resonate with so many more people, and even that didn't seem to. Well,
no, I'm going to tell you, yeah.
I call you every day, but
yeah.
I would have thought that would have been big stuff. And
yeah, I thought that the shows that we did on Yeshaya 17 and 18,
mm-hmm.
where we detailed how Yahweh 2,700 years ago predicted the Syrian civil war and how it would grow out of Iraq and what the ultimate consequence of that war was going to be and how that would transition into the forfeiture of the West Bank of Israel and how that would lead to an all-Islamic assault against Israel, all of which is just materializing before our eyes, and how the primary belligerent, the nation that Yahweh was most disappointed in all of that, is the United States. and what our contribution is to those wars and how we started those wars. When you thought, when you went through that 2,700-year-old prophecy, you would have thought that that would have resonated. Yeah, that's how in the world do you deal with that? Or when we first broadcast the creation account and went through detail after detail of how Yahweh got it precisely right and how it all unfolds. And then we went through the flood and it described all of the insights associated with it, that, you know, that somewhere along the line, it would have been way too compelling to ignore. I think, I mean, personally, I find Yahweh's testimony overwhelmingly compelling. It's just, it's so pertinent, so enlightening, so powerful that I can't get enough of it. And you would think there'd be more people that'd be looking for something that they can hold on to that's true in the midst of this sea of deception.
Of horror. Yeah. I did something that's very hard for me, and I did it initially when I go back with you about 7 years, I guess, now, and I am not a good translator, and I'm terrible on that, and I have no computer skills. I mean, I had trouble turning your own today until Terry came back with the dog so we could tweak the computer. So I'm good with a pencil and a paintbrush, but other than that, you know, I'm kind of useless.
Pretty good with your words, too.
We have a break.
We do at the top of the hour break. Can you stay with us, Kirk? Because
yes,
I'd love to hear what you said that you have done, and we've talked all around it and haven't gotten to it yet.
That's okay.
All right. So if you'll stay with us, we'll return with Kirk, and when we return with Kirk too, after he has explained what he has done, I also want to get Kirk's impression of that powerful statement from Yahweh that we considered yesterday regarding diet.